Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Welcome to the unofficial start of the weekend here in the Crescent City. You can't stop our special investigation exploring the world of drink and food in New Orleans and beyond. No, sir. Yep, summer is here. Happy summer, everybody. And with that, I would like to say, Cindy, get out of here. Just get the hell out of here. All right. Actually, probably friends didn't turn out nearly as bad, at least for us here in the New Orleans area, as it could have. I know there's still some potential issues with flooding, especially with some of our neighbors here in the region and things like that. So our thoughts are with them. I hope everybody is okay. Yeah, there we go. It's already hot. It's hot and it's humid. It's tropical season, tropical storm, excuse me, season. Here it is. Make sure you're prepared, friends. Follow those instructions and make sure you get out there and you are prepared. You know, one thing I noticed, actually, I wanted to mention right off the top here when I was actually, and this will relate to today's show that we have coming up for you, which I'll get into in a minute, driving on Tuesday and to tape most of the show into downtown there in the French Quarter at Mo Bar on North Rampart Street. And again, we'll get into that in a second. You know, it was the tremendous irony of watching people drive on the 10 in the rain, pretty heavy rain, you know, and through stretches of the pavement. That's not that new pavement that stops the splashing water from going up quite as much. So it was difficult to see. As we should all know, here in Louisiana, we now have a law that goes back, I think, just a few years, that when you have your windshield wipers on, you are supposed to have your headlights on. Now, what I think a lot of people just ignore it, and that's the part that I was getting with the great irony, is the marquees over the highway in a couple different spots there at the 10-6-10 Causeway merge, as well as the 90 and 10 split right there by Xavier University, said, wipers on, headlights on, or something to that effect. And the irony, there it is watching how many ever number of cars I watched just drive right under that marquee with their windshield wipers on and no headlights. Now, you may think, yeah, I've got those daylight safety lights on the front of my car and they're on. But part of the principle of this actually is that when you have your headlights on, your taillights are also on, so people behind you can see you. So just a little safety alert as my little public service announcement for today is when you have your windshield wipers on, have your headlights on because it's safe, safety, and it's a courtesy to other drivers. There you go. Let's all be a little bit courteous here, shall we? Okay, I'll get off my soapbox on that point. We do have a good show for you today. I'll get to that again in a second. We did most of it at Mobar. I wanted to mention some things coming up here this weekend. A couple big events going on. The Caribbean Festival taking place at Central City Barbecue. Central City Barbecue is on 1201 South Rampart Street. It is this Saturday and Sunday, June 24th and 25th. This is an evening festival. There'll be, a dance hall queen contest, drum lessons, salsa tent, activities for the kiddos, all that good stuff. It's 5 to 10 p.m. I don't exactly know how much. Tickets are $12, it looks like, for Saturday, $10 for Sunday. And if you want to get a two-day pass, they're $20. Pretty reasonable. All kinds of good food vendors out there, lots of good music. A good amount of like reggae and dance hall stuff, but some DJs, but there's going to be other stuff going on as well. So that's going to be a really fun event, a lot of great food. That is the NOLA Caribbean Festival, again, this Saturday and Sunday, 5 to 10 p.m., taking place at Central City Barbecue. It is an outdoor venue there, for at least for the festival, and that is at 1201 South Rampart Street. That'll be a good time. Also, a really mighty, mighty one here coming up is Festival and Foundation Incorporated, if you want to know what their full name is, and that is also this Saturday and Sunday. This takes place at Armstrong Park, which is at 701 North Rampart Street, from 11:30 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. It is free. You got to pay for parking if you can't find street parking, in the neighborhood back there and stuff like that. But a lot of great bands, a lot of great food. Again, a free festival. That's a good time, too. So what you can actually do if you're there over in the city is, go check out the Cajun Zydeco Festival at Armstrong Park during the day and then wander your way over there to Central City, 1201 South Rampart Street, and go catch the Caribbean Festival and just make it, man, talk about some like cool music, right? Cajun Zydeco, again, reggae, dance hall, great food all the way across the board. That is a musical and gastronomical delight, those two put together, I'll say. Also coming up on Saturday is the concert season finale, series finale there at Jazz in the Vines, taking place at Pontchartrain Vineyards up in Bush, Louisiana, just north from just an hour north here at the station and downtown New Orleans. The mighty, legendary Charmaine Neville will be playing, closing out the series. Charmaine plays nearly every year there at the winery, and it's going to be a lot of fun. There's also a special fireworks presentation that's going to take place right after the show. That is this Saturday from 6:30 to 9, taking place at Pontchartrain Vineyards, also outside. For more information and tickets and all that good stuff, go visit pontchartrainvineyards.com. And they do have the same offer as always, where you can get two adult admissions and a bottle of wine. For, in this case, you can choose the Voodoo Zinfandel for $25 or the Burgundian style Chardonnay called the Beausoleil Chardonnay for $30. And that wine's actually not sold outside the winery. You can only get it at the winery, so a little bit of a special treat. Friends, as I mentioned, we do have a really good show coming up here for you today. We taped almost all of it at Mobar, which is a great sort of French-style, well, I don't want to say French-style, but, you know, New Orleans-style bistro there on Rampart Street. And we interviewed the gang. Let's see, we talked with Jillian White, bar director. Chef John Bell is the executive chef, proprietor. Robert LeBlanc, Bradley Vecchiola, who's the assistant manager and also the staff sommelier there. And a lot of what we talked about was, you know, kind of their program, but the emphasis on local. And last week, if you didn't catch the show, please go back and check the podcast on June 15th, when we interviewed Chris Bryan and Jesse Carr, two great bartenders, Chris from Coquette and Jesse from Balise and La Petite Grocery. And we talked a lot about creativity and cocktails, but importantly, how the kitchen and the bar program coordinate with each other and utilize ingredients, try and mitigate waste, still bring a great product and all that kind of stuff. And we somewhat continue that theme. Mobar has a dinner coming up next Wednesday. We talk about that during the show, where everything, including all of the booze that you can get and this fantastic fixed price meal, everything is coming from within a 200-mile radius of the restaurant. So we talk a lot about the importance of local, how it's a philosophy that they use all the time, but a really high highlighting with this meal. And that includes a conversation in part where we talk about how the bar program and the kitchen coordinate. We talk with Chef John Bell and Jillian White, the bar director there, and everybody else about what that means to the philosophy of the restaurant and how they operate. So if I really encourage you to check this out, because it's a really cool theme that we talk about quite a bit here. We talked about last week, we talk about this week, and a whole bunch of other stuff. So really interesting interviews, a lot of fun. We have some good laughs, all that good stuff. So friends, we're gonna take a little break here on the Nola Drink Show. When we come back, we're gonna be at Mobar. We were at Mobar, but you're going to be there at Mobar if you're listening on WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans or in the podcast lands out there, wherever you may be. Thanks so much for tuning in. We appreciate it. Come on back.
Oyster rake scraping down Grand Isle Way.
Oregon wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass Wine you drink.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu. Life is meant to be lived, not endured.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
Welcome back to the Nola Drink Show. Brian D is here with you. WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and also in podcast land wherever you are listening. I appreciate you tuning in. As you know, we are here recording the show at Mobar and right here on North Rampart Street on the edge of the French Quarter. Pleased to be joined by a proprietor kicking things off here, Robert LeBlanc.
Hey guys, how are you? Thanks for having me, Brian. I appreciate it. Always appreciate it. Always enjoy our time together.
Absolutely, man. Thank you for hosting today. It's good to have you here. One of the things that we've talked about with you in times past and different yourself and other guests collectively is just sort of the state of the restaurant business in general, independent sit-down restaurants, but with a focus on New Orleans. And here we are in the middle of June, and as we know, at the end of May, there was a kind of another spate or run on restaurants closing.
Sure.
And we kind of knew this was coming. It's a tough time. Sometimes people start to bow out before the summer. But I wanted to get your thoughts on that. And let me lead off with this question, because some of the conversation has been around the idea, is there a so-called bubble and is the bubble bursting? Other people have argued, well, this, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, the different restaurants, Irish House, Oxala, several others closed, fine places.
Yep.
And one argument was made, well, it's not really a bubble. All these places had their reasons. You know, somebody didn't want to keep paying the bill, somebody didn't want to take it over in the family, whatever these different circumstances are. But I guess my question is, if the money's coming in the door, it's kind of easier to overlook those things, isn't it? And is there a bubble? Is there not? Where do you think we are?
I think we're in a downturn in the business cycle of the restaurant industry in New Orleans right now. And so that's not me dodging a question. I just feel like really since post-Katrina, because of the limited supply and then because of all the post-Katrina recovery money and then the BP situation, and New Orleans was just on this upward tear. And I think right now, in general, I think some of it's related to the supply of restaurants, and people will talk about the oversupply of restaurants, and I think that probably has something to do with it. It's just a harder fight to staff your restaurants. It's a little bit of a harder fight to train people, a little bit of a harder fight to get guests in and to get them to come back, because there's so many new restaurants opening. And look, great restaurants too, by the way. There's right. Nobody that would say that we're not in a much better place in terms of restaurant quality today than we were even 2 years ago. So all those things were natural. But I do think for the first time, really, since 2006, we're experiencing a little bit of an economic downtick. And I think it's due to a little bit of oversupply. I think it's due to the fact that the oil industry has not bounced back the way people thought it would. And we get a lot of entertainment that occurs here from companies based in oil and gas in Lafayette and Houma, Louisiana, and Thibodaux, and even Houston, Mobile, who just don't have the same entertaining dollars. And then I think that the fact the film industry has slowed down so much is kind of starting to take a toll. So I really feel like it started last summer, and we all went through the year and felt like it was going to bounce back. And I think we had, by and large, a pretty good spring. Everybody had a pretty good swing in the spring. But then when you face what's coming up in the summer, it's a slower time. And so I'm not as pessimistic about it in a sense that I think that the sky is falling. I just think that we all need to hold on. I think we need to be a little bit more optimistic about things, because I do think that it's your mental approach to things, right? So if you're constantly stressed and over worried about what's going to happen, your team feels that,
right?
That anxiety is kinetic, and then your guests feel that. And then so it kind of becomes a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy. So I really think that we're just in the downturn of the business cycle that is restaurants and hospitality in New Orleans a little bit. Not huge, but a little bit. And we're just not used to that. We've been a screaming eagle for years.
Right. So maybe it's, and people always want to apply these sort of hackneyed expressions, right? Like bubble and so on and so forth. And kind of my take on this is that it's kind of, it's somewhat irrelevant if you apply a bubble or whatever. We're talking about a bit of a correction in the market, various factors, as you said.
Sure.
A little bit of an oversupply. Something that I'd like to get your opinion on this, a friend of mine who is no longer in the restaurant business, but a long time veteran of the restaurant business here, working in various capacities from, server management, sommelier, all kinds of stuff, very familiar with the scene. We were chatting a couple weeks ago, and it was his opinion, too, that another factor, a lot of people will come into the industry looking to open a restaurant, probably with a bit of naivety in that. And like his view was, people are coming in thinking that I can open a restaurant and in 3 months, people are going to be knocking down my doors to come in, as opposed to the approach of maybe you need to have the capital for 1 year, 2 years behind you to stay in business. So a little bit short-sighted in that it's going to take a while to find your footing potentially. And if you come in without the ability to hang on for more than 3 or 6 months out of your own pockets, you could be in trouble. Do you think that's accurate?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think even with, you know, the way that we experienced Sylvain kind of 3-4 months, really slow. People talked about it, but really slow. And in that fourth, fifth month, it kind of picked up and it got better in year two than it was in year one. And it got better in year three. So it grew. But what we experienced with Cavan is Cavan fully took a year and 2 months to kind of to catch on. And Cavan, I would argue, had had more momentum behind it in terms of exposure. Sylvain was essentially our first restaurant. We did not have nearly as much attention on New Orleans. LeBlanc Smith didn't have as many projects under their belt. So I would say with more exposure and an equally
and more
high,
savvy on your part too.
Yeah, absolutely. Six more years of experience, of restaurant experience. It took us probably a year longer to get traction there. So I do think that's something that's a factor. It just takes a little bit longer to get people's attention. Now, New Orleans is a town amazing in this way for restaurants in that once you gain a foothold, once you gain traction, as long as you continue to care about the guest experience, care about your team, you will be crowded forever. And right. So I had the pleasure of having dinner at La Petite Grocery last night. And I know we have a convention in town, but La Petite Grocery on a Monday night was packed. Those guys are in there, I think, 17th year, maybe 16th year, but it's a great example. And I think that if you go to a lot of these New Orleans institutions, depending on how you feel about them, there's always a New Orleans institution for you, where your preference lies.
That's a key term, right? When you establish yourself as a quote-unquote institution, that's really where you hit, you're kind of tenured, I guess is what you're saying.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think New Orleans is like that when a lot of other cities are not like that. And I think that is the benefit to New Orleans. So if you can, on the front end, if you can kind of suffer through that extra year of hardship and pain or extra year and a half, a lot of times when you hit that connecting point, and to be honest, Mobar just hit it 6 months ago, 8 months ago. And that's mm-hmm. that was after parking. And we have a great team. We've always had a great team, but now it's kind of sticking. And now you don't have to worry about how you're going to pay the bills anymore, because you can have a pretty steady stream and you can expect those things. And so I think that is a good, very salient point that you make, that people do need to have realistic time expectations for when these things are going to return the investment.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. Now, you mentioned something right before we started taping here, this segment, Ro. We know, and we've talked about this before, the summer is a tough time. Tourism doesn't necessarily stop or even slow down all that much in actual numbers, but the demographics change a little bit. And we've talked about that on the show, that lots of times it's more regional budget travelers and some things that are not necessarily going to come to, you know, independent sit down restaurants where every night go eat at one
there.
When they're here for
sure.
A few days.
And
we're having some bad weather with a near miss, knock on wood, from a tropical storm as we're taping this. And,
like,
you know,
it
does become critical. Every day matters, especially this time of year as we do start to approach the true low season.
Absolutely. And what we do with our restaurants, which I encourage friends of mine in the industry to do, is we really teach and empower our team on how they can affect how many people come into the restaurant on a regular basis. I mean, what we typically do in the summer is we lower prices a little bit because it's a slower time. People don't have as much money. New Orleans, the gift and the curse of New Orleans' hospitality industry, which makes it magical, is a lot of it is supported within itself. So the hospitality industry supports the hospitality industry. So a lot of people that come to Mobar on Monday or Tuesday are people who work alongside us in the hospitality industry, and they're busy on Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Yeah, they're off Monday or Tuesday, right? Or
exactly. They make great tips. Well, when it's slower for those guys, they don't have as much discretionary income to come as frequently. Or if they do come, maybe they're getting a beer instead of getting a nice glass of wine. And that's to be expected. But I think if you plan for that and you're aware of that, it can be pretty manageable. But I think you have to be very proactive about it. The other thing that's really weird about New Orleans, just from a discipline standpoint, and typically if you're not used to budgets and if you're not used to really how to handle cash flow specifically, the trick to New Orleans, the sort of the mind bend to New Orleans, is you come out of your busiest few months. So March, April, May are the biggest 3 months in New Orleans by far, and you literally fall off that cliff. So it's not a gradual slowdown. June's pretty good, but once you get to July and August and September, you know, and then October is probably tied with March for the third best month. And so then it shoots back up. And so it's a really hard city to manage that swing, because mm-hmm. you don't get a gradual slowdown. So when you do really well in March, April, and May, you've got to be really disciplined about making sure that all your vendors are paid up, making sure all your lines of credit are paid down, making sure that you have a cash reserve so that you're not fretting if there's a hurricane, how you're going to pay your sales taxes and how you're going to pay those things.
That's a great point, Rowan. I think it's interesting because it's almost inverted if people, whoever, if you're listening from other parts of the world, potentially, you know, we look at certain places, Europe's a good example, or California, San Francisco is a really good example of this where, you know, they're fairly consistent throughout the year, but everybody peaks in the summer. So it's sort of an inverted kind of curve here that we're talking about in New Orleans, and people, people have to do the same thing in other places. They're just managing Absolutely. It a little differently, and maybe that swing, that trough, and those peaks are a little bit different.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it takes an incredible amount of discipline, because the way that works is, so you have, summer's really tough. October, November, December, you're typically kind of getting caught up on bills or lines of credit, or you're sort of just getting back to square. So then you start getting into the busy season, January, February, or March. It's really tempting to take that money and buy new equipment, or take that money and buy the car that you've been waiting to buy, or right, do things right, to reward yourself for the 6 months of sacrifice through which you just went. And you kind of get, you sort of get lulled into a false sense of security, and it keeps building from March to April to May. And then you hit June again and you kind of get caught. And it's a cycle that I got trapped into a few times when I was getting started, but eventually you learn how to navigate that. But I think that we could do well to support each other. And I'm not just talking about going to other restaurants and bars and buying dinner or buying beers. We can do a lot to sort of positively reinforce each other and make sure that we're all keeping our heads up and kind of understand that this is just a temporary thing.
Right. Well, let's do this, man. Let's take a little bit of a break. And this is a subject that is an ongoing subject. You and I will address this again in the coming weeks here, as we usually do. When we come back, friends, we're going to be chatting with Ro again. And we're going to bring, I think if I have this right, we're going to bring Chef John Bell in, talk a little bit about seasonal stuff, the really cool locavore dinner you guys have coming up next week.
Yeah.
And we're going to bring in Jillian White, bar director. We're going to bring all kinds of people here at Mo Bar, chatting about all kinds of things. So, friends, we're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show. Come on back.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
The French Market is open daily with pop-up fresh markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays. The Crescent City Farmers Market is at the French Market each Wednesday, rain or shine, from 2 to 6 p.m. On Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., find new and different vendors offering everything from fresh bagels to fresh herbs. Vendors change weekly depending on weather and seasons, so check them out often. Visit frenchmarket.org for a list of farmers market vendors, chef demonstrations, live music, and special events.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. It's football and festival season, and there's no better way to enjoy Sazerac Rye than in a pothole cocktail. Just fill up a glass with ice and your favorite root beer, and add 2 ounces of Sazerac Rye for a truly tasty toddy. Named after the city's most iconic of inconveniences, the pothole is proof that New Orleans never takes itself too seriously. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra-premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, and ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranax, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill and Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy Touch Vodka.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. We're chatting with Robert LeBlanc, and Chef John Bell has just joined us, and we're going to get to him in just 1 second. Ro, we were just finishing up a couple thoughts there on the topic about restaurant closures, and you mentioned Adolfo Garcia, who is the proprietor of several restaurants, but closed Primitivo, which is a fairly noted restaurant on Aretha Castle Haley, and he had some interesting remarks that you think will send a ripple effect, perhaps.
Yeah, I don't. I'm going to paraphrase, and that's always dangerous to say, but we all have a tremendous amount of respect for Adolfo. He's just kind of done it the right way. He's a great business guy. He treats people really well, and he's been very successful, and he's still super accessible. So I think with his statement to Noel.com and closing Primitivo, it was essentially, as I read it, the juice just wasn't worth the squeeze. In other words, it wasn't failing or doing miserably, but it just, the reward wasn't worth the effort that he was putting into it. And I thought that was really interesting perspective, because I think that will give people a little bit of a sense of, you know, it's okay if this isn't really working out the way that I thought it would. It's okay to change. It's not a bad thing, because right. He is incredibly influential, still influential to us very much. And so I thought that was an interesting statement. So when people talk about the bubble and doom and gloom, I think it's important to give credence to his statement, which sometimes it's not because they're failing. And I'm quite certain that Primitivo wasn't failing. It's just people realize this isn't really what I want to be doing, or this really the effort that I put into this, or it's just not how I want to.
It's not panning out.
It's not how I want it to be.
You know, Ron, actually, that was sort of my point at the beginning, where you can list all these restaurants, just the 8 or 9 that closed at the end of May, and reasons given, okay, Aretha Castle Haley, not, you know, that neighborhood hasn't really taken off per se. The Bywater, where Oxalis was, has always been sort of a tough place, a lot of turnover of restaurants there. And that was where I'm kind of coming from with this, is that I like your analogy. There's not enough juice from the squeeze, because if you're getting enough juice from the squeeze, those factors don't matter as much, right?
Correct.
You know, if things were going gangbusters, Aretha Castle Haley would be a brighter
correct
restaurant district. So with the Bywater, there'd be more stability, presumably.
Correct. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think that does matter. And there was something else that you wanted to
add. Yeah, the other thing I think it's important for all of us to realize is the way that media covers restaurants, the way that media covers food today, which is not the media's fault. It's our fault, because that's how we consume.
It's kind of the media's fault too, but we know that.
But it's what gets clicks, right? It's what gets eyeballs. And so, you know, the media does a really good job putting a lot of attention on something before it opens, puts a lot of attention on it right as it opens. And then after 4 to 6 months, there's not a whole lot of new things to cover about a restaurant. And so you're kind of in this no man's land. And then you don't really get attention a lot of times, unless you're doing different programming, which we're doing with the Local Board Dinner here at Mobar. But you don't get a lot of attention until it's time to close. And so some of this is, there's a lot more attention on closure because media has become more pop media, more quick reads and things like
listicles,
that.
Listicles are a significant problem.
Exactly, instead of long form. So there's a degree that there were probably always this many closures. There just wasn't nearly as much media attention on it. And it's become the new gossip columns, you know,
yeah.
Some of these restaurant websites. And so it's not nearly as bad as maybe it seems, but the media will make it look that way. And it's also used that as a lesson, is that that's kind of how the media approaches it. So even though it's great to be named best new restaurant open and you're busy, it's a long-term business, and you have to constantly be building your guest base. You have to constantly be building your culture and your team, and it pays off over time. So you can't get kind of lulled in by all of the attention that comes upon
being
open
in a top 10 list of where to eat or drink now,
exactly,
in New Orleans, because that goes away very quickly.
They'll buy you 6 months, and then they won't come back until you close.
Yeah, exactly, which is too bad. And everybody we know, I talk about listicles and my distaste for them all the time, so we go back and listen to previous episodes of the podcast if you want to hear that. Chef John Bell, executive chef here at Mobar, has joined us. Hi, John.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. First time on the show, man. Thanks for being here. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Good to see you. Did you have anything that you want? I mean, we were going to talk about some other stuff with you, but do you have anything that you want to add to that topic at all about...
No, I mean, I agree with a lot of what you all were discussing. I mean, each of those restaurants that every restaurant that closes has its own reason for closing. You can't do a blanket. This is the reason why all of these restaurants in New Orleans are closing. But I also agree with the idea that if you're not reaping the benefits of the efforts that you're putting out there,
then, why are you doing it?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense. We're doing this. There's got to be some joy in all of this, right?
Absolutely. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you guys, so John, since this is the first time that you've been on the show, why don't you tell people a little bit about your background and how you ended up as executive chef here at Mobar?
Well, I joined the team at St. Marie when St. Marie was still open, and then came over to open Mobar. I was sous chef under Chef Kristen Essig.
Were you the sous chef at St. Marie also before coming here?
No, I became sous chef when we opened Mobar.
Here, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But before starting at St. Marie, I'd always worked in the service industry in varying degrees. I spent 12 years as a bartender at Bridge Lounge when that was open. In every capacity, in every front of house, back of house, I've pretty much seen it all, done it all. So, but started at a very young age, at 12, I believe, starting working at my uncle's snowball stand.
Where was it?
Sal Snowballs on Metairie Road.
Yeah.
Okay. So, a very long-standing family institution.
So you learned your culinary experience, and sounds like largely came from working on the line, right?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes. I didn't go to culinary school.
Culinary school, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Here's an insane, not an insane, but this is a great point about John, and it's similar to most of the chefs that I've been fortunate enough to work with, but John really gets the hospitality aspect of it, and I think he specifically benefited from being a bartender for a long time, because you really get to learn how people think and what they like and what they react to. You see it more presently and clearly than you do when you're in the kitchen, and I think he's applied that to his cooking. And so I think one of the things John does impeccably is he creates beautiful food, but he creates it to nourish the soul. So he wants people to taste and feel when he cooks. And I think he got that ability. He developed that ability either consciously or subconsciously by working in the front of the house in hospitality for so long, for sure.
That's
and I don't
cool.
think I've ever told
no,
him that.
That's no, I completely agree. I mean, I think that's always been something I never thought about until I was actually in the position I am now, but going back and trying to sort of figure out where my creativity or where the drive was going to be, to suddenly now I am the one creating a menu and not just executing someone else's menu, as much as I may believe in it. Now I'm the one that has to take the lead and direct it. But looking back on my experience of having a customer come up to the bar and asking, can you make me a drink? And this is, I don't know exactly what I want, but this is kind of what I'm thinking about. And for you to have right. that immediate response of, I am going to make this thing right in front of you and see your reaction. You get that immediate feedback of, wow, I actually made that person really happy with what I made for them. Or, ooh, I missed the mark. Like, they took a sip and they weren't thrilled with it. Mm-hmm. So it gives you that sort of just immediate one-on-one interaction with a guest that you know whether or not you've succeeded or missed the mark in making them happy and making their experience better.
That's a really interesting point, you guys, and I think that's really neat, because we were using the term bubble to apply potentially to the restaurant industry earlier, and I think that sometimes maybe what happens too in certain situations is, in the kitchen, if you have a chef, the vision is in a bubble, meaning that I'm in the kitchen and I'm making what I make, and then it goes to the front of the house. And I'm kind of making it black and white, but there's maybe a disconnect.
No, you're right. No, you're right. I think that restaurants and bar culture exploded in the last 10 years based upon the food and how it looked and the quality of it and the drinks and how they looked and the quality of it. And I think it's moving much further back toward hospitality, which is where it started. And it's where it's always maybe should be. But so if you don't have this idea of hospitality, and don't get me wrong, the food's still got to be some of the best in the city, and the drinks have to be as good as anybody in the city as well. But it's got to be wrapped in a sense of hospitality that I think a lot of restaurants don't get, because you didn't have to get that 5 years ago. 5 years ago, it was about the science of food. It was about the science of cocktails.
Right.
And I think now it's gone back to kind of the art and the soul.
Let's do this really quick, you guys. Let's take a break, because I want to come back to that topic and get into some more stuff with John and Ro as well. Friends, we're chatting with Robert LeBlanc and John Bell of Mobar, and we're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show. Come on back.
Ladies, are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello wine. Cheers.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Baggio heads up the Small Plates and Charcuterie Kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m., with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
Get in the groove and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we soothe our soul. If it takes all that long. Come on and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till...
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Noel Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and podcast land wherever you may be. Thanks for listening to the show, however you are listening to the show. We are chatting here with Robert LeBlanc, proprietor of Mobar, and Chef John Bell, executive chef of Mobar. Funny how that works. We're at Mobar. It's convenient.
For the cycle.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's great. I like how all this plan comes together.
You wouldn't let us do it at Black Penny.
No doubt. So it was an interesting point when we left off, you guys, and we were chatting a little bit more during the break here about this, John. And I like what you said. We're talking, kind of getting at the idea of your sense of hospitality and understanding that there was an added element to this that maybe people would miss in other situations, meaning you're not just doing this for yourself of what makes you happy that you put on the plate, or as you just well said during the break, I got a bunch of extra watermelon sitting around. What do I do with it? There's another part of this that you're realizing or have realized and brought to the table.
No, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's not anytime when you, if you're running a special and you, yes, you sit on, we got an extra watermelon, we don't know what to do with it. Or it's also not the equivalent of me just trying to create something with watermelon that indulges me. Right, it is about ultimately whatever that dish is. It is going to be put on a plate and put in front of a guest of your restaurant, and that person should be happy with what is.
Even if it involves watermelon, and it's a good thing.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's balancing.
It's not, it shouldn't be a self-indulgent act of, right, of me as a chef to just create something that is, indulgent to my whimsy or like my, what I want to do that day. It is ultimately going to be placed in front of someone for them to eat and hopefully enjoy. And walk out of here saying that they had a really good time.
Right. Well, and Ro, that's that sort of swing back to hospitality, like we're talking about, kind of maybe getting a little bit away from the cultish, iconic sort of preacher kind of consideration. I'll use that term of cult of personality in the kitchen, behind the bar, whatever we're talking about, restaurateur.
Yeah, this is interesting because, so I think I was called by a restaurant writer who has a tremendous amount of respect, not only in the city, but in the South. And he mentioned that he felt like Mo Bar was probably the best restaurant in the city right now. And you guys know that I'm pretty understated and I don't brag, and I love all of our restaurants equally. But I'll tell you, I agree with that statement, because Mo Bar forever existed in this weird little vacuum that was hard to get to. And so we had to push ourselves to just be the best we could possibly be, just to hold on. And in that, we became this really great restaurant. But I'll tell you, that was through John's leadership. And the other thing that I think that makes him the chef that led Mo Bar to be arguably one of the best restaurants in the city right now, according to this food writer, that's not something we said or would ever say.
I'd agree, but that,
I appreciate that. Is John has a tremendous sense of self, and he's got a self-confidence that comes from being very clear about who he is, but also having a long and committed apprenticeship to Kristen Essig. And so Kristen's a great chef. She wrote beautiful menus, very creative. She was very diligent. I would say she's a great teacher.
Absolutely.
And John was very secure in being her understudy. So he was a very committed and a very willing sous chef. So when it was time for him to step up and be chef, he had no reservations and he had no self-doubt, and he also had no false bravado. So between his ability to cook with his heart and his soul, based on his hospitality experience and his love of hospitality, and his belief in self and sense of self developed through studying diligently for 2.5 years without incredibly obvious aspirations that created friction because he was trying to climb over the chef and do all these things, he became this wonderful chef through time and process. And it took time to do that. That would never have happened if John had been the chef within 6 months of his getting the sous chef position.
Right.
So I think that's a lesson to people, and that it sometimes takes a little time to develop, and that's okay. And look, I screwed a restaurant up. You know, the restaurant that I opened 10 months after I opened Sylvain, which was very successful, I screwed it up, but it was too much too soon. And I've learned that aspect of patience and studying and learning and just developing my ability to do these things. And I think John did that tremendously well, again, without obviously saying that or obviously thinking about that. Maybe that was part of his plan, but I think it's led him to be one of the most well-respected chefs in the city. And he kind of a dark horse. I mean, kind of came from out of nowhere, really. People hadn't really been familiar with him or his reputation. And so
that's a really interesting point, Rowan. I mean, a couple questions for you then, John, on that. So confidence of craft and ability, but not necessarily coming at it with, like Ro said, of a particular ego, like I want to dominate the universe of New Orleans food out of the gate.
No.
So that part, and then the other part too, you know, you came and really, this is something that I'll have you address after John talks, but coming from within the family, which you guys do a lot in this restaurant group, it's having that confidence to sort of step in to that situation. Is that a fair way to put it too? Because of familiarity, knowing the culture, knowing what needed to be achieved?
No, absolutely. I mean, I wholeheartedly believed in, when we opened Mo Bar, like everything that we were doing, every aspect of it, I absolutely stood behind, believed in 100%. And as we evolved, I saw how in the first year or two, as we had to adapt to the neighborhood that we were in, and like Rose said, we had to be on our A game at all times, given the challenges of the Rampart Street construction and just making it known that we were here. And that allowed me to sort of like seamlessly step into this position because this is home. This is home to me. I mean, if I'm not here, I'm at my home, but this is where I spend most of my time.
So you had been in the car for a while, so it was just slipping over to the driver's seat, right?
Yeah.
You know how the seats felt.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. No, exactly. Exactly.
Cool. Well, you guys, let's, we got a little bit of time here. Let's talk about the idea of We got a couple minutes before we have to take a break, so we'll come back and talk about this.
Well,
more.
But I have something else to say, please, about John. Ahead, I don't mean this to be like sort of a, you know, this is just an homage to John, even though that's what it is. But I don't think he's heard these things from my, you know, perspective. And also, I think as we're getting into these troubling times for restaurants and restaurateurs, the other thing I think John had in abundance that was magical that has magically impacted Mobar is Mobar had a tough 2 years. There's this idea called the Stockdale Paradox, and it's named after a guy who was a prisoner of war in Vietnam. I think his name was Dick Stockdale. But long story short, he knew that he was going to get out. He didn't put a certain date on it, and he did. He's become a very successful public speaker. There were other people alongside of him who knew they were getting out too, but they put timelines on it. I'm going to get out in 2 months or 3 months, and they constantly sort of let themselves down, and they ended up passing away, unfortunately. It's kind of a terrible story in the, mm-hmm. in the way that the came to be known, but John always knew that Mobar was going to be a great restaurant. He didn't know when exactly it was going to hit, but he had never any doubts or any reservations. He just every day committed to do the great work, great experiences, and we sort of built it one guest at a time. And now Mobar is doing very well. And I think John's commitment and unwavering belief, and I felt the same way, but John's a more visible presence here, and he's a more influential leader at Mobar, candidly, than I am. I think that's the other thing that carried the restaurant. And so that's another thing is we all go through these kind of tough times in the summer. It's like, it's summer, it sucks, but it will get better. I'm not going to tell you it's going to get better in the middle of August or in the middle of September, but it will get better. And if you just commit to that every day, mm-hmm. you'll see it happen. And that's exactly what John Bell did at Mobar. That's and Roger great. Isles did that with him, and that deserves to be noted as well.
Right. But you've had a good team in place here.
It's very lucky.
And that matters
incredibly
a lot.
Incredibly lucky.
Well, you guys, let's do this. Let's take a little break now, because thank you for bringing up that point. These are some important things, and having, again, that confidence in your craft and confidence in your mission, confidence in what you're doing is quintessentially important, I guess, in life and anything that we do if we want to do it well. It's probably not that I'm a great philosopher or anything like that. But we're going to come back. We're going to chat a little bit more with Robert and John, and we're going to talk a little bit about local ingredients. That's been a theme on the show the past couple weeks, and I want to get into that, talk about a dinner you guys have next week, and then we're going to come back and chat with Jillian and Bradley and other folks about the beverage program and all other things going on here at Mobar and the summertime, even though it kind of sucks. We're going to come back and talk about it because it's still good to eat and drink. Friends, come on back.
To shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street. Or go to our website, drinklabnola.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in the Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petite Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint, and it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. Cheers!
Night before last, I got loaded on a bottle of whiskey, on a bottle
Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in today. We are here at Mobar, as you know, and we kind of flip things around a little bit from the schedule. So what we're doing now is we are chatting with Jillian White, bar director of Mobar.
Hey, y'all.
Hey, what's happening? Get right up there, Jillian.
You know, sorry.
You've been on the show like five times. You know how to behave.
And I'm so shy.
Exactly.
And I'm always shy.
And Bradley Vecchio, speaking
good
of
afternoon.
Shy. Good afternoon. Yeah, man. And you've been on once before, but you're already looser now
I'm
than the time.
We didn't even have to do any shots yet. Yeah.
We might need to rectify that in the next segment. But cool. So, Bradley, you're the assistant manager here, and you're also a sommelier.
I am.
So you two guys are kind of the two. I mean, you're the bar director, but I would look to you two guys to be the folks kind of behind the beverage program here. Yes. At Mobar. Is that fair?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about that. We are going to circle back with you, Jillian, when we bring John and Roe back on to talk about local and working with the kitchen and stuff. But let's talk a little bit about the bar program. And Bradley, I'll start with you because we were talking a little bit about insight into wines. And you had some interesting experience. You were in France for Harvest, is
so
that right?
So I took a little break from Mobar and I went to do a Harvest. It's called Clos de Caveau, small vineyard outside of Vacaras.
I know that guy.
Yeah.
He was on the show not too long ago.
Henri Bougenet.
Henri, yeah.
Cool guy. So I was there for about a month and got to work closely with the vineyards. Very backbreaking. And then I got to work in the cellars as well, interning and for a little bit, and got to do some of that stuff.
Very cool. And then you passed your certified SOM exam in November.
I did after that. Not that that gave me all the knowledge I needed to know, but it definitely helped for sure.
I would imagine. Now, Jillian, you came from a perspective of you had worked behind the bar at Sylvain, one of the sister restaurants here to Mobar.
Yeah.
And then Sylvain, as I said, and then you were given the keys to the car, the beverage program here not too long ago.
Yes. Yeah. That was over, I was at Sylvain for a year after I had moved down to New Orleans. And then I came over here in the beginning of October, kind of as Mobar made its transition with the streetcar finishing. We did some renovations here, and then that's when I leaped into things and started doing the beverage program here.
And how was that to kind of, we've talked about that as a little bit of a theme. Mm-hmm. How was that to step into that role? Were you thrilled, scared, nervous, on top of it, ready to rock?
I would say a little bit of everything. You know, it was a really big position to fill. Having worked at Sylvain and knowing the culture and the way that things work and how we like to do things was definitely took a lot of, you know, the uneasiness out of it. But it's a big thing to step into. And also, I think, as Robert and John kind of spoke about, we had a little bit of a rough first 2 years. So it really made the work that I put into everything that much more significant. And I mean, I put that much more pressure on myself too, knowing that we're really trying to make this thing take off. And, you know, with Roger had been here and Brad was coming back, and it was nice to have, you know, some people who really worked in the family aspect to get us to where we are now. So we're coming on to a summer. We'll see what that means.
Right. Well, let me ask you one question before we come back to Brad with something. So how was it to, we talked about that with John and Roe, John being tasked essentially with establishing a lot of the culture and the leadership in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. That was your task coming in, to establish a lot of the culture or continue maybe in some cases, but be a leader in the culture behind the bar.
Sure. Yeah. My background is definitely heavier in knowledge of spirits in creating cocktails and hospitality. In that sense, it definitely was an interesting learning curve starting to develop the wine program, which has been really fun because I've learned a tremendous amount just in that short time. And then having Brad here too, and we work together with some of the decisions and, you know, doing tastings and whatnot. So yeah, it's been really fun, but it's definitely had a lot of different learning and experiences that I'm very thankful for.
Cool. But now, Brad, to you, how was that experience? Man, that must be pretty rewarding to come back, pass your certification, come back from France, and then be able to also step into a more creative role, I'm assuming, with the wine program.
Yeah, it's been really nice, and I'm glad that Jillian had that time to kind of do it on her own, and it really did, like, teach her a lot, and she's gotten to taste, like, multiple times a week and learn a lot about wine, and now we're kind of splitting the roles as like education goes. So she's been doing like more spirit education with the staff, and then I'll do wine education, and it's really fun.
And how's that go with the wine program then? What are you looking to achieve? What are you looking to emphasize here at Mobar? And you can even, if you want to take that, like say even in the summer, if you want a more specific
just question. To pair well with John's menu, really. Yeah. So depending on how he changes things, we try to bring on things to go nicely with that.
Now, there are different ways to accomplish that, though, right? Because you can look for varietal, you can look for region, you can look for price point. I mean, there's different things. You have multiple options with which to approach this from all those perspectives.
Yeah, we have a lot to keep in mind when it comes to that kind of thing, just because in a very broad sense of explaining it, Mobar is technically kind of known as a French bistro, but we don't want to limit ourselves in the wines that we have to only being French. We also have a very diverse crowd of people that come here, so we get, you know, people coming in that are going to the theater, or younger groups that are looking for something that's like a little bit more esoteric and weird. And so we try to have a good cross of, you know, domestic and old world and kind of like new fun stuff. And it just really boils down to stuff that works well with the food and that we believe in.
And Brad, let me ask you this question, because I think wine for a lot of people can be a mysterious thing. And especially like Jillian mentioned, talking about maybe younger generation looking for stuff that's a little more esoteric, there's a hand sell involved in that, right?
For sure. And I think the best way to sell it is to relate it to something else that they may have had before, and then just kind of nudging them in a different direction and telling them, well, this might be, you know, something that you could be into if you like this Pinot from Willamette Valley, you know, something like that, which is kind of cool, which is why I started this Instagram, Freudian Sip with 2 P's. And I just break down the personality of each wine and kind of do it in a fun way where it's approachable. And I think that relates to our generation for sure, because you can't just read a bio about a wine and know what you're going to get out of it.
Right, or having somebody pontificate to you that this is the great, you know, it's 95 points
right.
because I said so.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's an important point.
Robert Parker said so.
Yes, exactly, without naming names, which you just did, which is fine. I say that all the time. Whoops. I name him all the time. He doesn't care what I have to say anyway. So coming into the summer, y'all, with the bar program, and we'll get into this too a little bit more, Jillian, but what to expect, anything going on that we want to talk about? Yeah. Let's talk about the wine.
More and more rosé.
More and more.
Yeah.
We just got one of my favorites from Bandol, Domaine Tempier, which is nice. So we're getting as much as that as we can in here so that we have enough for it to go through the summer.
We've had the Chocolina, which everybody goes crazy for. We've just been working on building out, like Brad said, more rosés, some more white wines, but then maybe some more of the lighter style reds.
Yeah, lighter chillable reds for sure.
Yeah, okay. That can get us right through these brutal months.
And in having a good range of price point, I think is important, and something that you all do well throughout the restaurant group in general is there's not a lot of sticker shock with certain wines. You can get a nice glass for a reasonable price, or a nice bottle for a reasonable price. I think that's got to be part of the philosophy, correct?
Oh, for sure. Oh, yeah. I think our list is super reasonable.
And that's something we actually talked about with the Tempier that has a little bit of a following. Same with the Chocolinas. You know, you can find these wines in certain places that have incredible markup because you know that they're a little bit more exclusive and harder to come by. But at the end of the day, our thought process is it's really cool if we can get these wines and we want to be able to share them with people. So it's very transparent. There's not, you know, this like ridiculous astronomical price tag associated with it, because if we believe in something, we want to be able to sell it to people without them thinking we're just trying to up our check averages, right? Stuff like that, you know.
Well, and it's something
special. This is really great. You're looking for a $60 wine. How about this $120 one instead?
It's cool though. It's something special for our guests too, is because they can't get that online. It's some of these wines are cult wines and they sell out immediately. So it's great that we have those available,
and people can learn about it.
Exactly.
And to your point, Jillian, too, it's also I'll use Bradley's term. Going from 60 to 120 is a lot more than a nudge.
Yeah.
That's a hard push. Yeah. Well, you guys, Bradley, I know you got to get to a meeting, so we're going to get you out of here, and we're going to take a little break on the show. We're going to hold on to Jillian, bring Robert and John back in. So, Bradley, thanks, buddy, for being here, man.
Thank you.
See you. And, friends, we're going to take a little break here on the Nola Drink Show. Come on back.
So long.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickey Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickey Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickey Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickey Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event. Or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Every afternoon when I wake up, I say a little prayer and drink up.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Noah Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans, and podcast interwebs wherever you are. Thank you for listening to the show. We are back now again. We are still here at Mobar, and we hold on to Jillian White, bar director here at Mobar. Thanks for sticking around, Jillian.
My pleasure.
Having a good hair day.
Great hair day.
It's radio for a reason, Brian.
Fair enough. John Bell, executive chef. Not such a good hair day, John.
No. Never.
John, handsome. Who's looking at your hair, man?
Run his bike and all this craziness earlier.
Exactly. It is a bit humid out there, but Robert LeBlanc, man, without a strand, out of place, buddy. It's amazing.
It's a deal. If you're not going to be the most talented one in the room, you got to be the best brushed hair.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know if it was brushed or actually if he put it on, which is...
Whatever it takes, man. Whatever it takes. Desperate, man. I'm turning 40 soon.
And I have a hat on, so we don't need to know what my hair day is like. But we're chatting with you guys a little bit here. Nice to have all three of you here. We're talking a little bit about the philosophy of local, and you guys have a really cool dinner coming up, and we'll come back to this, but let's bring it up now. Really, it's a locavore dinner. Is this part of the Eat Local Challenge, guys? Not.
It's in tandem with that. That's okay. Sort of what inspired us to do it in June and have that be the theme of this first dinner in our summer dinner series.
Cool. Now, the whole idea of the dinner is every single thing on the menu is coming from a 200-mile radius.
Yes, from the city, yeah.
Literally every single thing. And every spirit, every everything. Spirit, everything that you consume that goes into your body.
Is all within a 200-mile radius.
Is all within 200. Yeah. Yep.
So that's...
Which is cool.
It's a fantastic...
Because people don't really know. I don't think most people, even people who are into farm-to-table or eating local, I don't think people really know the vastness of products that are available, local products that are available, I think.
You know, I was just going to say, Ro, it's funny that I was going to say that might be kind of a challenge, right? And then you start thinking about, oh, really, it's the summertime, the production here in Louisiana, just in general, there really is a bounty. So the challenge, I guess, is just the creative component. It's not the supply of ingredients.
No, certainly not the supply of ingredients. When we decided to do this, and I look at the product lists that I get from our local farms, our purveyors for seafood, from crab to Gulf fish, there's so much there to be utilized. It's just a matter of actually whittling it down into a dish.
Yeah,
because there's certainly a whole lot out there right now.
Well, and actually, you touched on something, John, that you guys, we're not talking about sourcing a whole bunch of different, working with a bunch of different suppliers. You guys have this philosophy in general quite often, so it's identifying some maybe specific things, but you're working with a lot of the same people that you work with, right?
Yes, we're still working with a lot of the same farms and the same purveyors that we always work with. So Covey Rise Farms, Chappapila Farms, Higgins Seafood in Lafitte, all people that we all on a regular basis are always consistently working with.
That's cool. So part of that philosophy then of local has always been important to this restaurant. And with this dinner, I think maybe it's fair to say that you guys are going to look to kind of show it off. It's not like it's getting away. You're not forcing something into the philosophy.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's weird. We feel like local products, and everybody knows that John and Jillian are the creatives. I have as much influence on what they do as Peter Grant had on what Jimmy Page and Robert Plant did in the 70s. So it's them, truly, but it's just the way to live life. We don't really talk about it. We don't use it as a marketing angle. The same thing that Jillian approaches cocktails, like you're a restaurant in New Orleans or you're a restaurant in general, you should have amazing cocktails. That should not be a calling card. And so it's as much to kind of highlight that, but really what it is to introduce these ingredients and introduce the breadth of those ingredients to guests and to people in New Orleans, so they can go back and then they might choose this vodka over another because they realize it's local, or they might choose to grab this beer as opposed to another one because they realize it's local, or they might choose this produce or these ingredients because they are local. Because we do it every day, but we sort of take it for granted because we don't talk about it a lot. And so I think it's as much to introduce the breadth of Bounty available to people here as it is to introduce the specific purveyors that we work with, or these products that we work with that are very supportive of us and very loyal and have been the whole time.
That's great. It's a good point. Mm-hmm. Jillian, with the cocktails then, mm-hmm. because we're talking, I asked you this question before we went on the air when you said everything is from within a 200-mile radius. And I said, does that include the booze? And you said, absolutely.
Yeah.
We have a lot of good producers here locally.
We do. It's really interesting now, too. There's been quite a large growth in the availability and the kinds of places that are popping up between distilleries and breweries and things like that, that are, you know, you're able to visit, but then also to create with as well. So there's definitely no shortage of options in that aspect of things either. So it's been fun working together because it also allows, you know, for making drinks for me to have to think a little bit differently when we work so closely with the kitchen.
What are some of the beers or spirits that you're liking right now that are local and maybe even highlighting some that are going to be on the menu next week?
So we will be featuring Nola Rebirth, the Pale Ale, mm-hmm. and we regularly carry the South Coast Amber. And we'll be featuring a beer and shot kind of combo with the Sazerac Rye, Rougarou, White Rum, Oriza Gin, Cathead, Honeysuckle Vodka. There's a lot of stuff.
Those are all good ones.
So it's nice to be able to feature those products doing a dinner like this.
Great. John, a little bit, what are some of the highlights on the menu? Are you still working on it? Or?
No, we finalized the menu, and this is all based on just sort of we're calling it the summer harvest dinner because this is what is the produce, mainly the produce was what drove the menu for me of what's available here in like early summer. So corn, heirloom tomatoes, watermelon, peppers of all types right now. Summer squash, like those were the things that sort of chanterelle mushrooms, which are beautiful right now. But those were the things that sort of like dictated how the menu was going to play out for me because protein wise, I know we always have amazing Gulf seafood. We get amazing crab meat from Higgins Seafood, great pork from Chappapila. So the protein side of the menu, I kind of not took for granted, but always knew that I could incorporate those things.
We can harvest animals in the summer.
Yeah. but the seasonal produce is what sort of like dictated the menu for me and how to incorporate those ingredients in interesting ways for the courses that we're using them for. So
is the dinner y'all going to be choose your entree, or is it a fixed course meal?
It's a fixed course. It's four courses. But we are giving people the option if you are coming and you are, you know, not committed to doing four courses, you're just not that hungry. If you just want to start with the summer squash salad and do the braised pork entree, then we'll certainly accommodate. Okay. We also have a great dessert. Our pastry chefs planned this amazing honey cake with peaches and summer berries for dessert. So, yeah. And looking forward to that one too.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah. So,
and Jillian, like, how's the drink program going to work with that?
So we're not doing necessarily pairings for the dinner, but instead it's going to be a specific list for the dinner that will have different cocktails that you can, you know, you can feel very easily see where the influence per dish is kind of tied in. But you can kind of pick and choose and make your own adventure with it. So. And then we have our regular drinks will, you know, everything else will always be available, but it's just fun to kind of do this this special menu to highlight things coming from behind the bar and what's coming up from the kitchen that night.
Cool. Let's do this, you guys. Let's take a little break here, and let's come back, and I want to talk a little bit more about the broader philosophy of how you two collaborate between the kitchen and the bar and some of the ethic row that you guys have across the restaurant group, how that concept works. Mm-hmm. And then we'll make sure we give everybody the specifics on the dinner, how they can attend.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Friends, coming back to the Noel Drink Show. We're going to take a little break here, and we're going to be back with more from Mobar. Come on back.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with New Orleans' own Sazerac Company, makers of Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In case you haven't noticed, rye whiskey is hot, flying off store shelves and dominating the bar scene in New Orleans and around the country. Rye's spicy and assertive character is drawing in those looking for whiskey with a bite, but that equally pairs well with cocktails. Enjoy it in cocktails like the Old Fashioned or Manhattan, or simply savor it on the rocks. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to Over Oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc, a great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
The French Market offers daily entertainment and delicious food and drink options throughout our six-block district. Whether you crave raw oysters or fresh produce, authentic confections or healthy daiquiris, you can find it here. Sit at one of our cafes and hear live local music. Enjoy a muffaletta, po' boy, salad, or cheese plate in the farmer's market. Check out our pop-up farmer's markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays for even more fresh food options. History is being made fresh daily at the French Market. Visit frenchmarket.org for food, drink, retail, and event listings.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickey Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickey Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickey Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickey Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in today. We're chatting with Jillian White, bar director of Mobar, Chef John Bell, executive chef of Mobar, and Robert LeBlanc, proprietor of Mobar. Notice a theme here. And we're sitting here at Mobar, as you know. And we're talking a little bit about philosophy of local, and we were just talking about the dinner that y'all are having next Wednesday evening, what are some of the, give the specifics as far as date, time, how you can make a reservation.
There's no set time. We are doing it June 28th. We didn't set a specific seating time because we wanted to give guests every opportunity to come at 5:30 or at 9 if you chose. We're just sort of treating it as a tasting menu available for the evening, so you can make a reservation at any time and come and enjoy all of what we have to offer, or if you are not interested in doing the entire menu, we can offer things a la carte as well. So,
okay.
But it is sort of in tandem with the Eat Local Challenge that's going on all month. So all of the ingredients, like we've said, all of the product used for the menu as well as the bar are all sourced within 200 miles of the city. Hopefully it's an enjoyable evening for everybody.
Yeah,
sure will be.
A really fun way to experience these dinners, to get kind of a large group, and you and Sylvia have joined us for two or three of them now, but you just get a large group of people and you do the pairings along with it, because it forces everybody to get a little loose, a little boozy, and it just becomes these fun, epic nights. But it is a cultural experience. You learn about so many cool things, and so it's, you basically feel like you're getting a cultural experience while also getting hammered, which is, you know, I'm getting to hang out with your buddies on date night.
The best part is if you remember any of it at the end.
Right,
so.
Right. Exactly. I'm thinking, I feel cultured after I walk out of here and I have no idea what I did or said to anyone.
By design.
By design. That's going to be a lot of fun, y'all. So, and we were talking about, and we'll circle back on the dinner before we go, but during the break, we were talking, you guys, Jillian and John, were talking a little bit about corn, and so corn in season and going to be on the dish. And the conversation, I think, is indicative of where I want to go with this, is the collaboration between kitchen and bar. How do you guys do it? Do you guys have these conversations about what you're bringing in, John, and what's going to be available, ideas that you have? How do you guys work together on that?
I think it's always a dialogue. We always constantly are talking about what is, A, what's available right now, or whenever we're planning a menu change, what ingredients are going out of season, what things are coming into season, what things can we play around with, what things can we cross-utilize so that nothing goes to waste. I mean, for a while we were making, and are still making, but when we make fresh ricotta in the kitchen for a special or for the gnocchi dish that we had on the menu in fall, the result of that was that we were sitting on quite a bit of whey left over from making the cheese curds for the ricotta. So that, I talked to Jillian about it, and then she was able to create an amazing drink with this product from the whey.
My brain, it took a little while to get there. I was like, whey? What?
You went whey.
Yeah. No way. Oh, God. So John had mentioned, usually the way that it works for us is the kitchen will put out a new dinner menu or new items, and then dessert will follow like the next week, and then the cocktails usually come about 2 weeks after that. And so it's great because it gives us a chance to, for me, and just to see what is coming in season, what's going out of season. We kind of game plan that way. So when John had approached me about the whey for that dish, I was like, well, that's kind of strange, but wound up doing a variation of a fizz with it. And so it actually wound up and still is on the menu and is one of the most highly ordered drinks, which I thought were kind of going, it was going to be a long shot with, but people really love it. It's been received really well. And so we always try to do that.
What is it, just out of curiosity?
It's a London dry gin with, we make an herbed simple syrup, so it has some thyme and rosemary. There's green chartreuse and Saint Germain, fresh lemon juice, and then whey, and it gets shaken in a Collins glass with soda water. So it's a little bit light, it's herbaceous, but it's kind of a cool way to get a drink that's similar texturally to a Ramos gin fizz, because you have the whey in there, but you don't have to wait 20 minutes for it.
Right. What does the whey bring to the drink, Jillian?
It almost gives the kind of texture and mouthfeel that, like, having the cream and egg white dew, but it's a lot lighter. So you get a little bit of richness in like a creamy, I hate using the word mouthfeel, so I'm not going to say that.
Yeah, like a creamy, mid palate is thicker and all
exactly.
That, right?
But it's still really light and refreshing, which has helped carry us into. I forgot. We also use Bittermans. Their it's a celery shrub, so it gives it a little bit of like green appley, celery, citrusy notes to it.
Tart, yep.
So it's been something that's been able to stand through the seasonal changes here. Yeah, that's a really great
sounds
one.
Sounds delicious.
And now that more produce, definitely. Now that more produce is making its way into being used, when I got here, it was going into fall and winter. So while there was still enough stuff to kind of get creative with, it's going to be fun now with a lot more produce and that kind of thing to play around with.
Right, fresh fruits and these things. And John, with you then, what are you excited about that's coming in? I mean, you talked about doing a summer squash salad, right? Or squash salad.
Yeah.
And then corn. What are some other things that are going to be coming on the menu, just in general?
I mean, I think one thing that's also just to talk about more of the cross-utilization between the bar and the kitchen. We're using watermelon in like three different ways for the dinner. So we're getting watermelon in, and I'm making a watermelon and jalapeno vinaigrette for a heirloom tomato and crab salad that's going to be part of the dinner. But then we're also pickling the rind for another dish on the dinner. But then Jillian's also using watermelon in one of the cocktails. So it's another instance of us just taking one product and just utilizing it to death, sort of, in every aspect of it that we can utilize between the kitchen and the bar.
And then delivering still good flavor, delivering
exactly
a good product. This is not being force-fed.
No. It's just trying to take an ingredient that is in a time when it is at its peak and just trying to utilize it in as many ways as possible.
So now when you guys have, and this was actually where I was going to go with this and ask you this question, as these things are coming in that you're excited about coming in seasonally, do you guys sort of regularly, do you have like a scheduled powwow, or is it just kind of like heads up, Jillian, this is coming into the kitchen and what do you think? I mean, how do you guys, because there's a lot of ideas, different ways this can go. How do you stay on top of it? How do you stay organized? How do you drive it in a way that is coherent between the bar and the kitchen?
Well, for the bar specifically, when I got here, we did kind of like a major change to the list, which is 12 drinks altogether. And now we will kind of swap things out as necessary. So, for instance, I think it was, January maybe, and like strawberries already started coming into season. They were in season so early that it would have been a shame to not utilize them just because we didn't have a bunch of other drinks that we were ready to change. So we like to just keep everything as fresh and current as possible without ever putting anything on the menu that we don't believe in, just because we want to like hit a time.
Well, let me ask you, because I'm sorry if it was a bit of a vague question, like with the watermelon, because I think maybe you guys might even take it for granted a little bit because it's sort of your process and what you do and your philosophy here. But with an ingredient, say like strawberries, right? You're going to use strawberries, John, in something or different things, and you can use strawberries. You're not using different parts of the strawberry, right? You're using strawberries.
We could, but it depends.
But like say with the watermelon, though, we're talking about actually using different parts of the watermelon.
Yeah.
So kind of what I'm getting at with the process then is the idea of saying, well, here's what I'm thinking about using this part of the watermelon, so here's what might be available to you.
No, exactly. And we've done that in the past, too. And that I think that's always been just sort of a constant dialogue between myself or Jillian and Ruby, our pastry chef, where I always try to keep them informed on, all right, these are the things I know our farms are going to be bringing us. This is what I'm thinking about using. What else can we use? How else can we use it? So corn, for instance, we've had on the menu in the past, and we'll bring it back this summer. But we did a gnocchi dish last summer with grilled corn kernels, but the husks were not getting utilized, and Ruby ended up being able to utilize them in a dessert by grilling the husks and infusing them into a milk to make a corn pudding, so that no no part of the ingredient went to waste. Every single part of it was utilized in some way,
and
shape, form.
Well. Yeah. Yeah. And Ro, let me ask you this question, because being the man who writes the checks, and this is actually kind of ultimately, we talked about this a little bit on the show last week, and one of the points I wanted to make is just that, is that this is, you're getting a wonderful meal, you're getting a wonderful product, wonderful drink, it's creatively executed, all this kind of stuff. This is also good business.
I mean, it's good business in a sense
on
that
all
it's,
those levels.
Right? It is. But it's good business, not in a sense that it's good business because we're going to make a ton of money next Wednesday, but it's good business in a sense that it is a different and unique way to share with the community who we are, what we stand for, what the very talented and creative people. And Ada is right alongside these guys, our general manager, in terms of the leadership of the hospitality. So it is good business in that regard. And those things stick. And we've done those things almost every summer. And that's helped Mobar really establish itself as this little jewel box of a restaurant.
And I don't want to denigrate it, but you know there is a cost effectiveness to this too, which is a good thing.
Oh, there's a great, I'm sorry, I sort of missed that theme. Yeah. Yes, it is very good business. It's less wasteful. Right. You know, you stretch, you know, your product investment further. So absolutely. And it's really teaching people kind of a way to live a sustainable life if they wanted to.
And that's a great point. And that's really the point that I kind of wanted to come up with here, you guys, is that we're not sacrificing quality or presentation or deliciousness through this process. So it's sort of, I mean, I hate using these, again, hackneyed expressions, but it's a win-win across the board. People are going to come away happy with what John presents on the plate, with what Jillian presents in the glass. And this is just, it's a solid business decision for you to do something like this.
Absolutely. And the interesting thing is, and Sylvia helps us execute the vision, and she's very influential on our design, but she'll tell you, we design all of our own places. We don't really work with interior designers or architects to help us design them. And one of the things that we were always told is, you're much more creative, you're forced to be creative if you're on a much more limited budget. And when we design places, so we're forced, you can't, it's not a money is no object approach. So we have to find these interesting pieces that are not super expensive, but that have meaning and have a story behind it, and that makes it interesting. And I think that applies to what they're doing as well. It forces each other to be creative. If John's like, I've got some watermelon coming in, or Jillian says that she's making a cocktail with watermelon juice, and John has to creatively think about the rind, I think that they push each other in that way to be more creative. I think limiting the range of things you can use, I think they both thrive in that environment, and they both feed on that.
That's great. John, do me a favor real quick before we have to close out. Can you tell people, just circle back on the dinner, how people can make reservations for next week?
Oh, sure.
Time and all that.
We can. You can call the restaurant. It's 569-9979, or make a reservation on Open Table.
Next Wednesday,
June 28th. We open at 5, and it's $50 for 4 courses, and that's including tax and tip.
Oh, wow. Even better.
Yep.
Folks, that's going to be a great meal. Come check it out at Mobar. Jillian, John, Robert, thank you, buddy.
Thank you, man. Really appreciate it, man. We're excited about it
today. And now that we're going to, well, I'm going to be back here to close out the show at a future time. We don't have to discuss time warping and all that. What I'm going to do now is, I think I'm going to go try a drink or something. So, friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Come on back to close things out. Thanks for listening.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next
next door at the W Hotel.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
Everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Hey, Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in today. If you're listening on the radio here in New Orleans, and thanks for checking out the podcast, if that's how you're getting the show, wherever you may be on the globe. Thank you for listening to the show. Hey, tell a friend. Tell a friend what we do here. Hope you found those last few segments there interesting at Mobar. A lot of fun to hang out with those guys and spend a good chunk of the afternoon there on Tuesday with them. Again, kind of circling back, I wanted to clarify one thing too. We make mention a couple times, two or three times during the interview, where Mobar sits there on North Rampart Street. If you're not from the area, you're listening somewhere else. North Rampart Street is one of the famous boulevards, historical boulevards that bounds the French Quarter, in this case on the north side. It's right across from Armstrong Park there, named after the wonderful, important, most maybe most important musician ever in our perspective, perhaps here, Louis Armstrong. It was a boulevard that was in a great amount of disrepair from different standpoints. We've talked about that a lot on the show. But what they did, the city did, is extend the streetcar line, the famous New Orleans streetcars that go down Rampart, and beautified the boulevard there quite a bit. Some landscaping and things like that, and the streetcars look great, but the street was chewed up for, I think, man, it was pretty close to 2 years in that range, and that, you know, made it tough on the businesses that were there. And this all kind of went on when Robert and the group took over Mobar from the previous proprietors. Were right before that, I knew they knew that was coming, but that was what we were referring to, sort of needing to hang on in some of these things. It was the streetcar construction, some of the stuff. It's a beautiful boulevard now. There's some really great businesses that are their neighbors there on North Rampart that are worth checking out, and there are more on the way, and there's all kinds of great cultural programming that goes on in Armstrong Park, mostly connected to music and things like that. So it's a really cool place to part of town to go visit there on the edge of the famous, the northern side there, the famous French Quarter in New Orleans. And, you know, friends, again, I mentioned this at the beginning of the show, and you got this obviously from the interviews, this philosophy of local. And sometimes, look, you know, things aren't always in season that people have to have in restaurants and these sorts of things, and certainly lots of great booze and alcoholic products are produced in different parts of the world, and we want access to those. But the idea of, you know, emphasizing local when you can, emphasizing fresh when you can, and then how the kitchen, the bar, everyone can work together to maximize that. And, you know, maximize that in a way that the visitor, the guest, the diner, the bartender, the bar patron can actually enjoy these products, get a good drink, get a good meal, both of those together, is what we were wanting to talk about here. So there's no sacrifice in quality, of course, and you know what, you're actually getting something even better because it's fresher, it's done creatively, all of these things. It's a good business decision, both from, you know, perhaps a marketing standpoint. It's good for Mother Earth. It's a good for your bottom line if you run a restaurant. So if you are in the business, that's why this show, and especially the one also last week where we talk a lot about this, I hope you're interested in that, because a lot of good conversation about how everyone can work together to achieve these things with great results in the end across the board. It's sort
part of a win-win-win. I hate using these hackneyed expressions, but there you go. And that was part of the purpose of what we are trying to talk about here this week as well as last week. So go check out that dinner next Wednesday at Mo Bar. Going to be a lot of fun. If I remember right, it's, as John said, $50 a person. That is very, very reasonable. It's going to be a great meal. We're talking a little bit about the menu items, and we're talking about it off the air about what they're going to be doing. It's going to be a lot of really, really good stuff. Great bar program that Jillian's put together. And the service there is always wonderful. Hospitality there is always wonderful. So go check that out. Friends, should be really, really good. Maybe we'll see you out there at the Caribbean Festival and the Louisiana Cajun Zydeco Festival this weekend, maybe at Pontchartrain Vineyards. Wanted to also mention, too, friends, on Friday, my lovely wife Sylvia and I took a trip and spent the night out in Ascension Parish, which is, you know, we were in actually Darrow, Louisiana for quite a while at the Homas House Plantation, ate dinner at one of the two restaurants there called La Teal's, had drinks in the Turtle Bar. Shout out to Derek and John there behind the bar. Great bartenders, beautiful bar, really interesting place to go eat, wonderful food. Got a tour by one of their wine guys and servers. Josh took us into the white wine and red wine cellars that they have there. Really cool. And then we went on to go visit a new distillery called Baton Rouge Distilling, and then we went to Southern Craft Beer, or Southern Craft Brewing Company, I believe they're called. That's a, right now they're only on tap, keg only, but they're getting ready to can and do some stuff. Really nice beers, cool little tasting room there. And then we went up into Baton Rouge right there along the river and visited another new distillery called Cane Land Distilling. Nice tasting room, very, very nice people in there as well. They're brand spanking new. They opened up in May, and I don't believe their products are quite yet available. They're only selling out of the tasting room, I believe, now, maybe locally in Baton Rouge. But point is, we had a really nice visit over a couple days last Friday and Saturday. And I think down the road here, we'll be doing a show or some shows out there. And kind of the goal is maybe to get out to some environs of the New Orleans area and record some stuff here and there, talking to people with, hey, maybe if you're here in New Orleans or you're coming to visit the area, some places that you can go that are spitting distance from the city for a day trip or maybe an overnight trip or a long weekend, and go check some of that stuff out. So go visit some of our neighbors here in Southeast Louisiana and in the region, and we'll look to be doing some of that down the road here and there in the near future. So look for some of that stuff. Go check us out on social media. We posted some pictures from our visit there on Instagram and Facebook. We're at NOLA Drinks on Facebook and Instagram. We're NOLA Drinks and the number one on Twitter, because somebody had NOLA Drinks before. I was the only one. And you can see more at NOLADrinks.com. You can certainly subscribe to the podcast, friends. It's on iTunes, Google Play Music, TuneIn Radio, and go visit NOLADrinks.com. You can find everything you need there. And I really appreciate you tuning in this week, kind of working on next week's show. Don't exactly know what's going on there, but we'll figure it out as we do here on the NOLA Drinks Show. Have a great weekend, friends. Hope to see you out there. Stay dry through a little bit of this rain, and everyone be safe. And until then, cheers, y'all.